Well, good morning. This is Per Fagren, KBOO News and Public Affairs. And our guest is Dr. Ravi Batra, who is an economist, a professor of economics at Southern Methodist University in Dallas, author of many books. The most recent ones are Greenspan's Fraud, The New Golden Age, The Crash of the Millennium, when there's one I have at home, A Myth of Free Trade, and among other books. And he has been writing articles and interviews. And Dr. Batra, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, welcome to KBOO.
Thank you.
Well, I read your interview with Truth Out, and it's very interesting. You talked about the wage productivity gap as sort of the root of the economic problems we're having.
That's right. That's the main cause of almost every economic problem today, but the administration and other economists are focusing their attention on the banking crisis. That's the effect. They are confusing between cause and effect. That's why all the trillions that they have spent on the banking industry and also Wall Street have not stopped the bleeding, they have not stopped this recession, and things will not improve until they pay attention to the wage productivity gap, because the wage productivity gap is a real cause. And what happens because of this gap is that there is overproduction in the economy. There is too much supply, not enough demand, and overproduction is much more difficult to tackle than the problem, the financial crisis, and so they're not paying attention to the right area.
Well, productivity then is usually defined as the amount of stuff, goods, that a worker can produce.
I
know this is
productivity. On average, how much a worker produces in the economy is productivity, and that productivity is the main source of supply.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever productivity goes up, production or supply of goods and services also rises, but the main source of demand are wages. So for a balanced economy, for an economy to stay healthy, supply has to be equal to demand. You cannot have too much supply and not enough demand, which is what the case we have right now. That's why, for instance, there are too many cars produced in the country, but not many people are buying them. So you have overproduction, and overproduction leads to huge layoffs, as we see right before our eyes. Every month there is a big rise in unemployment. So the cause is that there is extremely high productivity, but wages are stagnant. So as long as this productivity-wage gap remains, the recession will not be over. There will be more and more layoffs. Now, should we not pay any attention to the banking crisis? We should. But the focus should be mostly on the wage productivity gap. That is, we have to revive various industries like the auto industry or the housing industry, and we should not be focusing our total attention on the banking crisis.
Well, I know this is a matter of, you know, of a pretty factual record that productivity has been going, you know, they have figures on how much the productivity has gone up in the last, say, 30 or 40 years. And we also know that wages have been essentially flat out of since about the 1970s. And so there it is right there, the facts.
That's right. This problem has been in the making for a very long time. And that's the reason this recession is so deep. We have been postponing this problem by creating more and more debt, either through the government or through the consumer. And now the debt postpones the problem because you can raise demand with the help of all this borrowing. But in the end, debt cannot rise forever. So when debt stops rising, you have a major crash in the economy, and that's where we are right now.
And so if the banks, I mean, the banks have got all kinds of money, which apparently they are just sitting on, and, you know, they if nobody wants to borrow money, then what's the good of giving the banks all this money to lend? Nobody wants it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you know, even if you were to give people interest-free loans, even then they may not borrow money, because starting a business in a downturn is very risky.
You know, one thing. Well, this is a little sidelight here. You know, you mentioned cars, and I have heard. Now, I'd like to, if you have information on this, I'd really like to know. Is that, you know, the U.S. automakers claim that, well, it'll take them, you know, several years before they can start producing, you know, high-mileage cars. But I have heard that the U.S. automakers sell high-mileage cars in Europe. You know, they get, say, 40 or more miles to the gallon. But for some reason, they are not allowed to sell them in the United States. Is that true?
That's right. This is exactly what's wrong with the auto industry. They don't look at the long term. They only look at the short-term profits. And they focus too much on those SUVs, and then we had a major jump in the oil prices, and they couldn't sell them anymore. So that was the start of the problem. If they had maintained a healthy balance between small cars and large cars, they wouldn't be in the current soup as they are.
Is there any reason why they can't just take these cars and sell a few of them here in the United States? Is something stopping them from doing that?
No, nothing is stopping them. But now demand is down all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not even much demand for small cars in the U.S. So look at what's happening to Toyota and Honda. They produce small cars, and even those are not selling. But the main problem in the end, we come back to this too much supply and not enough demand. And what is the cause of that? Rising productivity, stagnant wages, and total focus on the banking industry. So that's the whole problem with our economy.
Well, another little sidetrack. I just read in the paper recently that the Tata company in India has come out with a $2,000 car.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
I saw a picture of it. It's about 10 feet long, and it's, you know, a pretty nice-looking car, and it's supposed to get fantastic gas mileage, and it only costs, apparently, $2,000.
Yeah.
So anyway, back to the wage productivity gap. So what the bosses do then is, instead of giving the workers a pay raise, they're sort of giving them credit cards.
That's right. The government is bought out by business interests, and the government is following policies which restrain wages, and this way profits go up sharply, and high profits produce very high stock prices, and that's how so many people got lured into their they invested their 401k plans in the stock market. But these high profits are supported by debt.
Mm-hmm.
And if debt was not there, profits won't go up, because companies have to sell their products before they can make profits. So once debt stops growing, you have profits start to fall, and there is a stock market crash. And because of that crash, people have lost almost half of their wealth in their 401k plans. So this is an ugly situation because the government tried to restrain wages through its policies. It was very successful, but now you have a major crash and possibly a depression coming up.
Okay, well, this is Per Fogring, and we are talking with Dr. Ravi Batra, who's a professor of economics at Southern Methodist University. You know, I've been hearing quite a bit lately that you know, economic voices you hear on the news say that our economy cannot function without credit, without debt. Is that true? Why do we need debt to make the economy run?
Well, our economy used to function very well without debt and credit until we started free trade and cut the income tax sharply while raising taxes on the poor and the middle class. In other words, until we started to follow policies that restrain wages and make the rich richer, we did not need much debt in the economy. But this is the way it is now. And we can go back to the early policies that we had in the 1950s and the 1960s, the two decades when the living standard grew at a very strong pace, at the fastest pace in the United States. If we went back to those policies, which have been already tried, then we can fix our economy very quickly.
Well, you know, they talk about things like a company might need an overnight loan just to meet its payroll. That made me scratch my head. Why does a company have to take out an overnight loan just to make its payroll? They should have, you know, if they're functioning right, they should have enough money set aside for that.
It's very sad that these are the companies which are run by small businesses. They are the ones that need credit to meet their payrolls. And look what they did to small businesses. They raised their tax rates so much. It started with Reagan. The small business tax rate, which is a self-employment tax. Self-employment tax has the biggest bite on small businesses. And that tax went up by 66% under Reagan. And ever since then, it has stayed very high. So these small businesses have to pay very high taxes. That's why they need a lot of credit. And they did all this so that they could cut the income taxes for the wealthy. And as a result, our economy is very dependent on credit now. It should not be like that. You're right. And that's what I have been. That's why I made the forecast. You know, we mentioned two of my books, which came out recently, Greenspan's Fraud and The New Golden Age. In both these books, I wrote that Greenspan's Fraud was written in 2005. The New Golden Age was written in 2006. In both of them, I wrote that within 2 years, we are going to see a major economic chaos. That's part of the subtitle of one book. We are going to see a major economic chaos because of the rising wage productivity gap. Then we'll have stock market crashes, major problem of unemployment, houses won't sell, banks would be in crisis, and it would be incredibly hard to come out of it. So I made certain recommendations for various reforms, and I said if we follow these reforms and start closing the wage productivity gap, then we can avoid the coming chaos. But nobody paid attention, and now we are in that soup. So my forecast right now is that with all the focus that they have on the banking industry and not on the other major industries, we are moving towards a depression.
Mm. Well, I'd like to talk some more about the new golden age later on. But you know, when you write about free trade, this raises a question I've always wondered about. Is that it's very interesting. Your writing raises all these fundamental questions. You know, the explanation for free trade is what they call comparative advantage. You know, one economy is able to grow apples real cheap, and the other one grows bananas real cheap, and so they swap apples for bananas. And this is sort of the standard free trade argument. But what happens if one economy grows apples and bananas real cheap, and the other one can't match it? What happens then?
That's exactly where we are, and we can't match it, so our living standard has to come down. Well, we can't match it simply because our wages are higher than other places. Now, the question is it desirable to have lower wages just because we want free trade? No, of course not. Why should we reduce our living standard so that we have free trade? The purpose of economic policy is to raise people's living standard, not to reduce it, and so that's a problem.
So what do we do with all this debt that we have now? I just read that the Federal Reserve is buying something like $300 billion of Treasury debt. Now, what does that mean?
It's going to create a lot of inflation in the long run. They still want to maintain the status quo, and in the process, they're going to wreck the economy.
So what they're doing then is they're adding $300 billion, you know, to the economy, and which sort of...
No extra production.
Uh-huh.
And so there is increased... there won't be extra production, And most of this increase in demand will go to foreign goods. So what good is it?
So we can expect a lot of inflation any time now, I suppose.
Well, not any time. I'm more worried about a major depression than inflation at this time. But in the long run, yes, we could have major inflation.
So what do we do with all this debt? Is there any way to get out from under it? What? How do we deal with this?
You mean the foreign debt or the...
Well, I guess if you combine all the debts, the government debt, business debt, consumer debt, I mean, they add up to trillions and trillions of dollars. What happens to it?
They do add up to trillions and trillions of dollars. And
how do we...
Foreign debt is not that much of a problem. It's the domestic debt. The fact that an American consumer is maxed out in debt, that's the main problem.
Okay.
And so we need to eliminate our trade deficit first.
Mm-hmm.
Eliminating the trade deficit would revive manufacturing in America, and that will then slowly we increase the minimum wage to close the wage productivity gap. First, we eliminate the trade deficit and also focus on the auto industry, like you could give a 20% tax credit to buy a car. And buy a car made in America.
Mm-hmm.
So people start buying U.S.-made cars. Then we increase employment in our auto industry. And as things start to revive, then slowly raise the minimum wage to close the wage productivity gap. As the minimum wage goes up, all other wages will also rise. And then consumers will start to buy American goods. Once this happens, banks will not need any rescue.
Mm-hmm. What about, now I've been hearing some people talk about government banks. Now, North Dakota has a state bank, and I guess what it can do, it can issue its own bonds, you know, for projects and things like that. Is that a good thing to do? I mean, right now
it has its own bank. This is okay. They don't have to borrow money in the financial markets. They have they're using the funds from the public, and I'm sure it's insured by FDIC. So that's fine. I think that's a good idea for various states to do that.
Because apparently, you know, the way things are now, well, here in Oregon, you know, when there's something that needs to be funded. You know, the state of Oregon, they wind up paying interest to the banks to float these big bond issues, where in North Dakota, with a state bank, they wouldn't have to do that. They can just issue their own. It's almost like issuing your own currency.
Well, it's similar to that, but I think this is actually not a bad idea for states to open their own banks, because they can use the funds in much better ways than what these big banks do. They simply finance takeovers. You know, so much of bank lending has been done to finance takeovers, and takeovers simply create more layoffs. And as there are more layoffs, there are pressure on wages. Wages don't rise while productivity keeps rising. So actually, that's a good idea for states to open some banks of their own, to create some competition with these big banks.
So tell us about now this latest book you've written, the New Golden Age. Can you tell us some more about that?
Well, I wrote this book in 2006, and I predicted that because the government policy was simply to create more debt in the economy to postpone the problems of overproduction, pretty soon there will be a major banking crisis, because this debt has been rising for almost 30 years nonstop. So I predicted that there will be major economic chaos, and because of that chaos, the public would want big changes in politics. So they will throw out many politicians who are responsible for this mess. And so I predicted that a man like Obama would be elected. And this was in 2006, remember. a man like Obama would be elected to bring about change. But change won't be that easy because you have to elect a new person, but also change ideas. And ideas change, don't change as fast. So I predicted that this major economic chaos will continue till at least 2010, maybe 2012. And then people would be so fed up from all these problems that there will be a major revolution and the rule of money would end in our society. To me, today's capitalism, or capitalism in general, has meant the rule of money in society. So once the rule of money is gone, then the economy will revive at a tremendous rate, and we will have a new golden age, an unprecedented golden age. So my tone in the book is very optimistic, except that I think until about 2012, we have major economic problems.
Well, so what will replace the rule of money?
The rule of money would be replaced by economic democracy.
Uh-huh.
See, if you have economic, like right now we have political democracy, and see how many, what is the average wage of a politician? Like the president earns about $400,000 a year, and other congressmen, et cetera, earn about $200,000. We don't have wages like that. They are paid to CEOs and like millions and billions of dollars because there is political democracy. Once we have economic democracy, wages will rise in proportion to productivity. That's the only way to stabilize this economy in the long run. I'm talking about the long run changes. Otherwise, if productivity rises and wages don't, we are not going to come out of this recession and even depression. So in the long run, we have to have economic democracy where the management is responsible to the employees. Employees will then elect the board of directors, and board of directors will appoint their executives. But these executive wages will not rise while other wages are stagnant. So when productivity goes up, everybody's wages will have to rise, and that will end the wage productivity gap and therefore solve our problems. So in the long run, I foresee economic democracy replacing the current monopoly capitalism.
Do you think this will be a more decentralized economy?
Definitely. Right now we have real dictatorship in various companies. When a CEO can reward himself bonuses and wages even when they are dependent on the government, it shows they are so arrogant and they think they can do anything. So we have kind of dictatorship in the economy, but in the long run, factories will be run democratically, and there will be a new golden age after that.
Well, you know, they call themselves the masters of the universe, so maybe we should bring them down to earth again.
Right.
Well, I mean, and how do you think this will come about? You talk about a revolution. I mean, how would it happen? Would it happen through the ballot box or just?
Yeah, That's right. So through the ballot box, they will overthrow our current politicians and demand changes in the economy and society.
Mm-hmm.
So that will, it will all happen through the ballot box. It will happen only because there is a economic chaos. And once the politicians want to be reelected, and when President Obama finds that his current policies are not working, then he would look for new ideas. And those new ideas mean the end of the status quo, the end of the Wall Street barons and huge bonuses and the end of the economy running on credit and foreign money and so on.
Well, right now, of course, the status quo is all the money. They sort of fund the elections and they have the most of the media, you know. I mean, we're just a little small radio station here that's paid for by the people who listen to it. You know, this is quite a struggle to be up against the people with all the money.
Yeah, it's a struggle, all right. But the things will change. Unfortunately, it takes a major economic downturn to bring about revolutionary change, but I'm not surprised this is happening, because poverty results when you follow policies, that expand the wage productivity gap. There is increasing poverty and unemployment, and in the end, those who are responsible for those kind of policies are thrown out, and that's what I'm predicting is going to happen in the next 4 to 5 years.
Okay. You know, one last question. You know, when people talk about, you know, things they need to do to, you know, get the economy going again, and even, you know, the Republicans talk about all the debt and everything, I don't hear much talk about what does our military budget do? We spend, what, $500 billion every year on the military, if not more. I mean, what does that do to an economy?
Unfortunately, our military budget is only going to rise. I have made a forecast in the New Golden Age also that terrorism is going to spread in the world, and that will mean military budget is only going to rise. And that leaves less for other programs, healthcare, education, and so on. So we are facing a huge mess pretty soon. And a lot of it is the creation of George W. Bush and his kind, the Reagan and his dad and so on. Clinton is also responsible because he signed for NAFTA. And NAFTA, after NAFTA, our productivity went up sharply, but wages fell even more. So all these politicians have been sold out to big money and big business. And so in the new gold, people will realize that, and they will not elect people. They will not elect politicians who raise a lot of money. Money will be a negative in the future elections.
Okay, I think we'll end it there. We've been talking to Dr. Ravi Batra, professor of economics at Southern Methodist University and author of many books. The latest is The Golden Age. Do you have a website where people can contact you or read more?
Oh, that's right. I have a website. It's very simple, ravibatra.com. And my name is spelled R-A-V-I-B-A. T-R-A.com, RaviBatra.com, and I have my latest articles on it and a lot of stuff on it now. I'm writing regularly now.
Well, thank you very much for being with us, Dr. Ravi Batra. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you.
Okay.